Microphones are live.
Good morning and welcome to our May 15th meeting.
Congratulations.
Good morning. If you'd all please rise and join me in saluting the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Changes to today's agenda are amended item on consent B1, letter transmitting plans and specifications for public bidding of the construction of a new parking lot and related exterior improvements for ADA compliance at the health campus formerly known as General Hospital. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of bid opening set for June 14, 2007 at 3 p.m. Item B2 is a submittal of a letter recommending an extension of the bid opening date for the Operations Center Utility Bridge and Waterline Project in Camp San Luis Obispo, Highway 1 near San Luis Obispo, 2nd District. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of the bid opening date set for May 24, 2007 at 3 p.m. Items B1 and B2 are misnumbered. The cover sheet needs to be amended to correct the following. B1 should be numbered B2, and B2 should be numbered B1. Amended items for hearing under C1, A, B, C, and D. Staff is requesting the item be amended by replacing the first three pages of the resolution and two exhibits due to a numbering error of the exhibits. The amended pages are attached for your approval. On added items for closed session, number 15, negotiator's name is Santos Arona and Gail Wilcox. The name of the employee organization is SLOCIA, Public Services, Supervisors, and Clerical. Number 16, negotiator's name is Santos Arona, Gail Wilcox. Name of employee organization is the Deputy Sheriff's Association. Number 17, negotiator's name is Santos Arona and Gail Wilcox. Name of the employee organization is DAIA. 18, negotiator's name is Santos Arona, Gail Wilcox. Name of employee organization is SLOCIA, Trades and Crafts. 19, negotiator's name, Santos Arona, Gail Wilcox. Name of employee organization is Sheriff's Management. Number 20, negotiator's name is Santos Arona, Gail Wilcox. Name of employee organization is SLOCPPOA, corrected spelling. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And those are the changes to today's agenda.
And you did that all in two breaths. Entertain a motion for presentation calendar.
For approval.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Asajian, second by Supervisor Ovett. Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovett.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye. Move this into our presentation calendar. Supervisor Asajian, you're going to go off first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may ask... Myralene Morris Whitaker, come forward, please. Maybe Ms. Biagini will join her to take a picture. What we'll do afterwards, Ms. Biagini, in order not to rush you, will have her pose in front of us to take a picture. So
join her.
You'll save some films. This gives me great pleasure to read this resolution proclaiming May 12th through 20, 2007, as National Tourism Week in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas travel is at the heart of America's economic and national security. And whereas the travel industry supports the interests of San Luis Obispo County, contributing to our employment, economic prosperity, international trade and relations, peace, understanding, and goodwill. And whereas travel ranks as the largest industry in San Luis Obispo County in terms of revenue generated. And whereas 8.6 million travelers visited San Luis Obispo County, contributing $1.1 billion to the economy of the county. And whereas, given this contribution to the economic, social, and cultural well-being of the citizens of San Luis Obispo County, it is fitting that we recognize the importance of the American travel industry. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 12th through 20th, 2007, as National Tourism Week in San Luis Obispo County. If you'll come forward and accept this resolution, please.
Thank you.
get you in the center here so she can focus better.
Technically challenged in there.
You're welcome to say a few words if you would like to.
Well, just a few words because Supervisor said all that needed to be said. It is a huge industry in this county and the number one industry here in San Luis Obispo County. And the support of the supervisors has been tremendous, and we really appreciate that. And we also want... I'm sorry?
Would you please give your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Myraline Morris Whitaker. I am the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau President Board this year, and greatly accept this proclamation from the supervisors. Thank you very much. Also, we want to acknowledge that we have 21 years promoting the county this year, and that's another achievement we've made this year, and we're just excited about that as well. So thank you so much for your tremendous support, and again, for the proclamation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next presentation is Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have Daniel Long Young and Mary Lud Baldwin come forward. And I see also Tracy Buckingham and others from the Department of Social Services. This is a resolution I'm proud to offer and read recognizing May 2007 as Foster Care Awareness Month. Whereas San Luis Obispo County recognizes the dedication and heartfelt contribution made by foster parents in providing supportive and loving homes for children and youth who must be removed from their birth families for their safety and well-being, and whereas San Luis Obispo County of Department of Social Services' number one goal is to support children and families, and in doing so provide a safe and nurturing environment in which children and youth can become productive adults, and whereas foster parents have a significant role as child advocates in educating government agencies and the general community regarding the effects of child abuse and neglect, and whereas the San Luis Obispo County of Department of Social Services and its partnering agencies, Aspira Foster Family Services, Central Coast Family Center, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, Family Care Network, God's Haven for Children, Homeless and Foster Youth Services of San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, the Independent Living Program, the Interagency Placement Team, Los Padres Foster Family Services, the Probation Placement Unit, and Transitions Mental Health are committed to finding loving and appropriate placements for children and youth who cannot remain with their birth families. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered, in recognition of the contribution of foster parents and families, and most importantly, recognizing the attributes and strengths of children and youth in foster care, the Board of Supervisors declare the month of May 2007 be designated as Foster Care Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. And if you'd come forward.
Why did you folks come up front here?
We'll do the right.
Thanks.
I suspect we're going to have to tighten up a little bit here, shoulder to shoulder, and kind of turn sideways a little bit.
Feel like a big family.
Thank you all.
Okay. Was someone going to say it?
Yeah, I think Daniel and maybe Tracy were going to.
My name is Daniel Young. I am a former emancipated foster youth. I'm 18 years old, and I participate in the CYC Speakers Bureau, which is a branch of DSS. And I'm here on behalf of all the foster youth in San Luis Obispo County, and I would just like to thank everybody once again for their help and their support. I myself would not be here today without the help of San Luis Obispo Department of Social Services, and I mean foster parents and CASA workers and Family Care Network in general. this is a long list to thank. But on behalf of the FOSS Youth, like I said, thank you guys for recognizing this. I really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm Tracy Buckingham, Social Services, and just want to take a minute to thank everyone here who's come. We have probation and CASA and Family Care Network and Los Padres and God's Haven, and I don't know who I'm missing, Family Care Center. And just thank you for really the work that everyone does every day to support our foster youth and help them to emancipate and have healthy, permanent lives. Thank you.
And thank you for all the work that you folks do.
Supervisor Overt, will you do introduce Older Americans Month?
Yes, sir.
Do you give that to him purposely?
Well, he's having trouble getting the last name out, I heard this morning. And I want to read this in honor of Jim Lindholm. But
I knew that was coming here.
As the oldest member of the board, I think we all ought to honor Jim Lindholm for the oldest person in the room, probably.
Anyway, I'm proud to present the resolution proclaiming May 2007 as San Luis Obispo County Older Americans Month. In San Luis Obispo County is the home to 36,000 senior citizens 65 years of age and older, and 30,000 with severe disabilities. Whereas older citizens in San Luis Obispo County represent a dramatic change in our national demographic makeup, and whereas older Americans are diverse, respected citizens who continue to contribute to our nation's social and economic well-being. And before I go any further, I should invite Cindy Marie Abzi and Marsha Bollinger up and come on up while I'm finishing off reading the resolution. And Ann Travers is back here, who's Adult Protective's. And just wave, Ann. Thank you. In San Luis Obispo County, the Adult Service Policy Council, which is represented today, is a countywide collaborative of 44 local public, private, and nonprofit agencies and groups tasked with providing planning, development, systems design, service integration to improve services for seniors and adults with disabilities. And whereas the Adult Service Policy Council and other local agencies and groups serving senior citizens and adults with disabilities are commended for their effort to improve the lives of older Americans. Therefore, be it resolved that the San Luis Obispo County proclaims 2007 as San Luis Obispo County Older Americans Month and so honors the values of our older Americans who have made so many contributions to our society. And Cindy.
What do they have you two up here for?
Supervisor Ogle, if I might, I was just doing some math calculations, and Marcia and Cindy Marie combined do not reach the same age as Mr. Lindholm at the other end of the game.
Cindy Marie Abzi, chairperson of the Adult Services Policy Council.
And I'm Marcia Bollinger. I'm on the executive committee of the Adult Services Policy Council. And you've received our annual report, which lists some of the things that we've accomplished this year. One of them is healthcare and healthcare management for low-income adults and seniors with disabilities. And that's a real important issue for the Adult Services Policy Council, and clearly it is for you all since you joined the lawsuit on Medicare rates and because you've made efforts to combine the health agency to help make it more efficient. We also have been working in political advocacy and disaster preparedness. As someone who spends a lot of their work time in meetings, I want to tell you that this is one of those meetings I look forward to going to. It's informative, we collaborate, we have movement, and we see things happen. It isn't just one of those meetings that twirls around and does nothing. And we want to thank you for your support for the Adult Services Policy Council and anything you can do to help senior citizens and the disabled population with their health care needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Chairman Lindthal. I'd like to call Stacy King and Pete Jenny up. It gives me great pleasure to read a resolution thanking the numerous county park volunteers for their outstanding service. Whereas these volunteers have provided over 50,000 hours of service annually to San Luis Obispo County Parks, and whereas these volunteers have performed various duties, including helping to design and construct parks, natural areas, and recreational facilities, and whereas these volunteers have allowed facilities to continue to operate at a desirable standard by providing ongoing maintenance, and whereas the action of these volunteers has allowed facilities to operate at lower cost to the community while providing facilities all community members can be proud of, and whereas these volunteers have reduced staffing costs and thereby have saved the county and the community hundreds of thousands of tax dollars, and whereas the actions of these volunteers has created a better parks, recreation, and natural area system within our county, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo commends the volunteers for their significant service to county parks and the people of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the board. Pete Jenny, Parks Manager. I want to introduce to you Stacy King of our staff. Stacy has the unenviable role of wearing multiple hats for us. In addition to running our recreation program and our marketing and media relations, perhaps no more important task than handling donations and volunteer services, and she's going to talk a bit about that. But I can't help but get my 2 cents worth in that volunteerism is one of those things. It's a real, I was going to say two-edged sword, but it's really a two-sided coin. It's one of those things that we certainly benefit dramatically from it. We do things that we could not otherwise do without volunteers, hundreds of thousands of dollars of saving. But we also think it's a way we give back to the community because most of us like to give something back in some fashion, and it's an outlet for the community. So it really is a two-way street, and we think it works well for everybody. And with that, I'm going to introduce Stacy.
Again, Stacy King, Park Operations Coordinator for County Parks, and on behalf of volunteers, I'd definitely like to thank you for this resolution committing the efforts of our volunteers. Over the years, our volunteers have contributed hundreds and thousands of hours doing ongoing maintenance, special projects, recreation programming. And just in this past year, there's been over 50,000 hours worth of volunteer service, and that equates to about $400,000 worth of labor support for county parks. We're hoping to even double that within the next few years. Some of the volunteers, some of their projects that they do are planting trees, family activities, beach cleanups, interpretive programs, landscaping, trail improvements, habitat conservation, fishing clinics. They design and construct park structures, landscaping, customer service, and they also organize fundraising events to help with scholarships for some of our recreation programs. And this list goes on. Because of that, what we're going to do is we're going to have a volunteer appreciation barbecue this Thursday at Cuesta Park, and I hope that some of you will be able to make it. And what I'd like to do, too, is to introduce some of the people that are actually in the audience. If they would stand up, some of our volunteers. There's not a whole lot of them here because I think everybody's got jobs, you know, and they're there, or they're either volunteering in our parks. So this is a select few. Mainly, our volunteers consist of individual volunteers through Adopt-a-Park agreements. We have frontline staff volunteers. We have Friends of groups, outdoor groups, recreation program volunteers. We have dog park groups, service organizations, and those that are in the service organization as individuals, for instance, like Boy Scouts. We have advisory groups. And what I'd like to do now is to introduce to you Pandora Nash-Karner, who's actually been a volunteer for County Parks for the past 17 years, and I think she can give you a good idea of what it's really like to be a volunteer for County Parks. And thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Board. I'm Pandora Nash-Karner. And I thought about it this morning about what is a volunteer and what is the value. And a volunteer is about giving. It's about dedication. It's about commitment. It's about contributing and benefiting the community that we all live in. It's working with others to make a meaningful contribution that's a lasting one and hopefully for a better future. And in the process, serving the community makes volunteers' lives better. The benefits in return are staying active and engaged within the community of which people live in, and above all, it's having a sense of value in the society that may not always value them in other ways. Sometimes we don't feel appreciated, and being a volunteer is one of those things that really comes back to all of us. People volunteer for an endless variety of reasons. Many people want to give back to their community or to promote a worthwhile activity. They do it because it feels good, because we can walk away and have that private smile that only we know about. Some volunteer out of a self-defined sense of duty. They see it as participation in the community, is part of being a good citizen in the country of which they live. This is the intrinsic value of being a volunteer. It's not about money, and it shouldn't be measured that way. I know we do that. Yes, we can add up all the volunteer hours, and we can multiply it by some kind of hourly rate, and we can determine the economic value of volunteering, but that leaves a big hole and a big gap because it's very simplistic, and it assumes that only economic measurements have value in our society and that volunteer time is really nothing more than just free labor, and it's far more than that. It's kind of like parks. The parks that these volunteers choose to serve, we can look at those parks and see a swing set and say, well, that's for Johnny and Susie, and that's what parks are all about. Or we can look at parks and we can see them as supporting the physical and mental well-being and health of our society and our citizens, of promoting economic stability, of reducing juvenile crime, of increasing workplace productivity and providing activities for young and old alike. And how do you place a value on that? And that's what the volunteers do. So the impact our volunteers create is really immeasurable. Our park volunteers, just a few that are here today, represent a wide variety of people, and they are extraordinary individuals who choose freely to give of their time and their energy and their talents to help others without any expectation of compensation. They are the people who act on some internal calling to do what they consider is more worthwhile than many things. And we all get to be the beneficiaries, and we all get to be very grateful. So thank you for your honor today, and I look forward to working with the volunteers in the future, and I know they look forward to working with you. Thank you.
That was our last presentation. We'll move on to public comment. I have three requests to speak. First is Eric Greening, followed by Ian Journey.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. There will be two 2050 workshops in the near future planned with the intent of the major participants being elected officials. The first is this Saturday for the coastal side of the Santa Lucias, then 2 weeks later for the interior. I hope you will all attend at least one, and I say that even though I know you would have more fun at the Dana Adobe this Saturday supporting the great work of the Dana Adobe Amigos and learning the dances of the old California ranchos. Maybe you can stop by after the workshop. How's that for a plug in passing? But for those of you who are at a 2050 workshop, I hope you will help steer the process in a new direction, which the SLOCOG staff has already acknowledged is needed. That is to pay more attention to resource constraints than has heretofore been the case, particularly water supply. The 2050 emphasis up to now has been on the patterns of development we the people wish to see, wish to design for ourselves. What is needed is more recognition that we are not the sole authors of our fate. We work in collaboration with the earth itself, without whose resources no future is possible. For our collaboration to be harmonious and productive and not self-defeating, We need knowledge about the carrying capacity of every part of the county based on the distribution and safe yield of such needed resources as water and topsoil. It is my hope that the sophisticated technical tools available to the 2050 process can be brought to bear on our own conservation element update, and that our resource management system can be made more comprehensive and precise. I'll leave a placeholder here because one specific issue regarding the resource management system will be what I talk about relevant to a forthcoming hearing, but these general comments relevant to the 2050 process are intended to get you thinking globally and holistically, and I hope they do. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And you actually got some extra time. We were having some problems with the timer, so I don't want you to worry about that. Next speaker is Ian Journey, followed by Kevin Rice.
How you guys doing? My name is Ian Journey. I'm here on behalf of Cal Poly, representing the students and faculty who are supporting the La Grande Tract and the open access for the Oceano State Vehicle Recreation, including the students that are here present, as well as faculty advisor Keith Vorst. We believe that the financial support that the Oceano Recreation Park brings to local businesses in the region is crucial to the economy, as well as providing for for families and other families and communities. I can personally attest, growing up, spending a lot of time in the state park, a lot of good memories. Also, the wildlife support that the park brings in land management initiatives and whatnot. We just believe that this is very crucial, and it would be in the best interest of the community to keep it open. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Kevin Rice, followed by David Dugan.
Morning, Board, Mr. Chair. Kevin Rice, San Luis Obispo. I just wanted to spend a couple minutes again talking about our parks at Oceano. What a great thing that we recognized our parks in the presentation this morning. We need all the parks we can get. I'm really disheartened that a lot of people seem to disparage this one park for the type of recreation that goes on there. It's really upsetting to me. I just hope that you guys, in your considerations, realize how important this park is to a lot of people. In that respect, I've been working Farmers Market the last 3 weeks representing Friends of Oceano Dunes. I'm here as an individual today. With that organization, I'm bringing you guys some petitions we collected. This is just from Farmers Market. We were able to collect 396 signatures, and there's plenty more out there that I wasn't able to get my hands back on. But these are the people that came to us at the booth. If I wanted to go out to the beach or go around, I could get thousands and thousands of signatures. It's just how much time I want to dedicate to the activity. But these are the people that came to us because they heard we were there, and they want to support our park. In that regard, I hope you guys see that State Parks is very, very active in the community, that their stewardship is wonderful. Anytime there's an issue, State Parks is right there, in my perspective, and they're here supporting the community. So if there's some doubt as to how the State Parks is going to manage that land if they get a hold of the La Grande Tract, as we hope they do, I think they'll do a wonderful job. If there's if that land is put in jeopardy of not being sold and the park shuts down, I don't know what we're going to do out there as far as recreation goes, but the state park spends almost $1 million a year managing the snowy plover and all their other environmental mitigation activities that go on out there. And if that money goes away, then those birds are just left on their own. So we do a lot of good out there. There's a lot of money generated that helps the environment. When people hear people disparaging what's going on out there, remember that that's going to dry up and those birds will be left out in the dark. But anyway, I just wanted to give you these petitions this morning and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. David Dugan, followed by Adam Hill.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Fire danger. Well, at the Regional Water Quality Control Board hearing or meeting on Thursday, somebody walks in and said the Cuesta Grade is on fire. and I think it was about 50 acres that burnt. But they, from what I heard on the radio, that they suspect it was from somebody's exhaust that started the fire. Somewhere there on Cuesta Grade, I guess you can turn your car around or park near the grass. But the fire danger is high. It may look green out there, but it's brown underneath. In fact, on my way here on Foothill Boulevard, there was a car parked alongside the road with its muffler stuck in about 3 foot high of weeds. And that might be a job they want to get Public Works or somebody on to cut that grass down. It's alongside the Foothill Boulevard. It's needed all over the county, I'm sure. Water conservation. Los Osos is trying to launch into a major water conservation. I guess you would call it a blitz. We are trying to get it all together, as well as there's private individuals who I believe are going to the schools and talking water conservation. So it's taking hold. As it stands, we haven't been able to get the water we needed this year, well behind our rainfall statistics as far as that's concerned. We should have a lot more water, but we're not getting it. So it's the people of Los Osos specifically should cut back on their water use. And I know we keep saying this all the time, but I think we have to harp on it because we got lots of owners out there that aren't going to be able to build even if the sewer goes in. Even if you don't have the water, you can't serve. And I believe this board is working on something towards that end to make sure that at least the people or new building people as far as subdivisions that they're going to have to really put out to retrofit in Los Osos. And speaking of retrofit or such what, at the Regional Water Quality Control Board, there was another issue on their agenda concerning somebody who had an illegal bathroom. And they think that because they got the uncaring Regional Water Quality Control Board to okay that bathroom, that's not as a new discharge, and we know it is, the water conservation effort was brought forward. And I said we're at a level 3 severity rating in Los Osos. And because this bathroom is illegal, that you shouldn't allow this bathroom, and considering the fact that it'll be more used to that and that it will, even by an increment, cause a little bit more seawater intrusion. They totally ignored that. And in fact, they bent backwards for this person to get permission from them to have an illegal bathroom. Even though they said, this is an illegal bathroom, and we're trying to make something legal that's illegal, oh, we'll let the county deal with it, basically. So I spoke on it once before. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Last request to speak is Adam Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honorable Board, Adam Hill, Grover Beach. I just wanted to follow up on what Eric Greening said about the importance and value of the 2050 meetings that are coming up. The first one this Saturday in Pismo from 9 to 1. Former Governor Paris Glenn Denning is speaking, and he's one of the founders of the Smart Growth Movement, and I had the privilege of being a student when he was Professor Glenn Denning before he was governor, and I think that will be an excellent workshop. And then I think about a week later, 2 weeks later in Templeton, Stefanos Palazoidis, who's one of the founders of the New Urbanist Movement, will be speaking in Templeton. And I think that these are both excellent opportunities for decision makers, for planning commissioners, for the public to get more information and to really create synergy that is needed throughout the county. Whether we call it smart growth or strategic growth, I know that the county planning is going to be presenting a planning framework for the general plan as well. So I really do urge everyone to come to these workshops, the first one being this Saturday from 9 to 1 in Pismo at the Vets Hall. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My last request to speak, we'll close the public comment, move on to consent agenda. I receive no request to speak for the consent agenda. Madam Clerk, do you have any down there? No, you do not. So we'll open for public comment. Seeing no one step forward, we'll close the public comment. Bring it back to any board members. Supervisor Ovett, any items you'd like to pull or discuss?
No,
or? Supervisor Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Asajan?
Mr. Chair, since Mr. Bolts is here, I would like to ask a question on item 15.
B15? Supervisor Gibson?
No, sir.
Supervisor Asajan, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bolts, for
Suffolk, thank you for all the efforts to seek out any amount of monies available that can be brought to our county. Because of the recent activities or increased activities with graffiti in the Pomo or Argandy, I've seen it in this downtown San Luis, so it's not just the South County, but selfishly, my businesses have suffered a great ordeal for the last 2 months. Are there any monies that we can also bring to generate more people power to take care of this problem?
The state sheriffs, thank you for inviting me up, Steve Boltz, Sheriff's Department. State sheriffs are working closely with the legislature in increasing the amount of rural crime monies that will be available next fiscal year, and we're anticipating that allocation to San Luis Obispo County will in fact be increased, mostly in part or mostly because of the success of the agribusiness in San Luis Obispo County and the focus for Sheriff's Patrol to be in the ever-growing communities, somewhat abandoning the rural areas and not paying as much attention as we could. So, in fact, the sheriff is on his way to Sacramento today to meet with legislature and see if we can't reach an agreement.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Chair, I move approval of the consent agenda items.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Asajian, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Lindahl.
Aye. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Your board's next item is D1, a review of the county growth rate and authorization of amendments to Title 26 Growth Management Ordinance. All districts recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
John, we'll give you a minute to get started there. It looks like you got a pile of papers to short. And
plenty of papers, Mr. Chair.
Red light and green light. That's what.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the board, John Ufrat from planning staff. We have actually a very brief presentation for you today. Really three things that we want to consider. And this is our annual review of the county's growth rate, together with authorization of amendments to Title 26, which is the growth management ordinance that the county has had in place for over probably 10 years. The first thing, though, is that, and you know, based upon our staff report, that the although we have a cap that is based upon a 2.3% annual growth rate, for the last couple of years, just because of supply and demand and probably resources within the county, there we have not come anywhere close to that cap. But we still feel it's worthwhile to have the system in place, although it does need some improvements. And so we've made some suggestions, and we're hoping your board will direct staff to go back and reexamine this ordinance to make it so it actually addresses growth and is more aligned with our resource management system. We expect that that will probably take us at least a year, or hopefully about this time next year we'll bring back an ordinance that will focus a little better on and come up with ways to encourage growth where we have resources available. And as you earlier this year heard your report on the resource management system, you know there are areas that have problems with water and sewer and even road circulation, but we believe by aligning the two together, will be in better shape. So with that, I'm going to. We're certainly available for questions. We have long-range planning staff here as well to, if you have questions. I would.
Just wondering if Mr. Wilkin or Mr. Stevenson needed to comment. They were looking like they were going to say something. I think they were commenting amongst themselves.
All right. I think we'd just turn it back to you, and if you have questions, we'll jump in and. If you have a couple of speaker slips, maybe.
Supervisor Patterson, I think, has a question.
Yes. I'm curious to know, Mr. Ufrat, you list a number of areas where you would like to address the current growth management ordinance. And I'm curious to know if how the process would work, the timing of it, if it's something that – I mean, I think your recommendations – are good. I think they would be an improvement to the ordinance to integrate the smart growth principles, particularly into the ordinance, to encourage more development within the urban reserve line and within the village reserve lines. And I'm wondering how the process will occur and what the timeline will be for that.
Well, I would expect that the timeline is going to be approximately a year, because you know, we'll have impact upon the communities, and so we would need the time to kind of, our first step would be to come up and with a number of suggestions similar to what we mentioned in our report, where we want to look at ways that we can encourage growth where there are resources, which for the most part is going to be within urban and village areas. Whereas the pattern that we're seeing today, at this point in time, it's we're seeing more development in the rural areas as opposed to urban. So we will come up with a kind of a list of potential ways to encourage that to occur. We would work with the communities and actually bring it back to your board before it was codified into the ordinance. But I do expect it would take approximately a year in time.
Okay. And another question is that you did provide a list of the dwellings that have actually been constructed so far this year, or at least through April 27th of this year, and were significantly lower than what we've been in previous years. And I know that there are a number of types of housing that are exempt from the growth management ordinance, and I'm curious to know how many of those exempt units, the affordable units and secondary units as examples, have been built. Do you have those numbers?
I do. And in fact, on page 3 of your report does not identify those. And, you know, if you added up those columns on those that are used, it's about 368. But we were actually surprised when we did the research just recently on secondary dwellings. We had over 200 of those that were approved this year, and that's only in the last 10 months. And so we still have two more months to go. And it's one of the more popular permits that we have, and I expect it to be even more popular once we have a program in place right now to have some pre-approved plans for secondary dwellings that should kick in, I believe, July 1. And so I hope those numbers will even go up even higher. For affordable units would be included within that figure. I think it was like 211 total, including secondaries and affordable units.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm with Mr. Ufrat a couple things. One, the changes or the decisions we make today become effective as of the start of the new fiscal year, July 1. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I just wanted to indicate, I've got a couple questions about planning department's work in response to the recently certified level of severity 3 in Los Osos. And while we have a presentation and we have public comment, I don't know if Mr. Caruso needs to be consulted on where we are, but I am interested in how the timing of our actions in response to that certification time out relative to the 1st of July, and whether there might be some decisions we might need to make in the growth management ordinance to make sure we're coordinated with that effort, responding to that significant water resource constraint.
Well, I know Mr. Stevenson is actually in the audience and might be able to assist me on that, but I don't.
And see Caruso here.
No, I was just saying that. I'd like to discuss that after we have the presentation
okay.
and public comment, and make sure that we're moving in the direction so the growth management ordinance, resource management system, and our reaction to that certified level 3
okay.
are coordinated.
If you'd like, Mr. Chair, we do have a very brief PowerPoint presentation, approximately 3 minutes, that we can give that would give a little bit more historical background. Up to you.
I think if it'll help answer some questions, 3 minutes is certainly a good use of time to show us what you have.
Okay.
Excuse me, I don't know if your microphone's on. If it is, you need to get closer, and you need to state your name for the record, please.
Sorry about that. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Joe Manson, County Planning Information Services Group. Today, planning staff is providing your board with a review of the annual growth rate. I would like to focus on 3 elements of the ordinance related to, first, the annual growth rate for FY07-08, second, allowance of a carryover of 10% of allotments, and third, future ordinance amendments. This slide illustrates historical allocation use during the period from 1991 to the end of fiscal year 05-06. As you can see, there was a brief period from 1999 to 2002 where the number of available allocations were fully utilized with submittal of residential building permits. Planning staff is recommending that your board maintain the countywide 2.3% growth rate. Planning staff is also recommending that your board maintain the Napomo Mesa 1.8% growth rate. The growth management ordinance allows a carryover of a maximum 10% of the previous year's allotments. In FY 05-06, 65% of potential allocations were used. This fiscal year, 06-07, as of April 27th figures, 33% of potential allocations have been used. Staff feels a carryover to be appropriate because the two-year trend will not exceed the 2.3% growth rate. Currently, this fiscal year, the 10% carryover does not apply to the Napomo Mesa. Staff recommends that your board maintain this position. Staff is also requesting that your board authorize planning staff to investigate and return to the board with possible ways to amend the growth management ordinance in the future. The first, automation and simplification, which is currently underway, such as the transition from the county's mainframe computer to the department's Tidemark system. Better coordination with the resource management system, the RMS, such as better alignment of development with identified RMS levels, such as level 3. Improved planning practices, such as encouraging infill, not sprawl. Encouraging types of development determined to be desirable, such as mixed-use projects. And lastly, encouraging development in urban areas, therefore discouraging sprawl. This next slide shows the number of dwelling units your board would authorize for fiscal year 2007-2008. I would like to end with our staff recommendation that you adopt and authorize the chairman to sign the attached resolution to approve the annual growth rate of 2.3% for areas not in level 3 per the RMS. Secondly, allow the carryover of 10% of last year's allotments. And lastly, authorize staff to develop future ordinance amendments for the board's consideration that will improve the operational efficiency of and be more consistent with the resource management system. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, we'll open to the public. The first request to speak is from Eric Greening, followed by Morgan Rafferty.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I'm glad to hear that you are working on future ordinance amendments to bring it into more close alignment with the resource management system. I'm puzzled that the Napomo area is the only one called out for special treatment based on level of severity 3, and I'm a little confused about the process for the other places where a level of severity 3 has been found for some resource or other. Relative to the proliferation of growth in rural areas, despite the intent of our smart growth policies to direct it toward urban and near-urban areas, part of the problem comes from the collective response of the Council of Governments to the mandates from the Housing and Urban Development, where actually 2,000 extra units were directed toward the rural areas beyond what was the population would call for proportionately. That decision was made based on what was presented to the Council of Governments as an offer from the county, but it was not an offer that your board ever made. It was an offer that a staffer made on behalf of the county. One thing I would strongly urge you to do is direct that any future offers or negotiations relative to numbers for the Housing and Urban Development go through your board, and that no staffer be authorized to make any offer to the Council of Governments until or unless your board has acted, and hopefully you would then act consistently with our smart growth principles. On the subject of the resource management, one specific request I would have for a more informed process in future years: as soon as possible, hold a study session
to have staff map the aerial extent covered by your findings for each resource and identify the blank spaces. A lot of your findings are by community, and there are blank spaces between the community, and much of the development is happening in those blank spaces. And the connection with the previous testimony on the 2050 workshop is simply to recognize that the people doing those workshops have very sophisticated technical tools and excellent abilities with things like GIS mapping, which may help in putting together that study session. So there's sort of a cross-fertilization, and I think your request could be delivered at the 2050 workshop. Maybe look at the other jurisdictions. Do the local cities have anything such as a resource management system that can be aligned with the counties? Get the whole picture. Anyway, that's my suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Morgan Rafferty, followed by Jerry Bunin.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors. My name is Morgan Rafferty. I'm the Executive Director of the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County. And these comments are made on behalf of our Board of Trustees and the hundreds of members of our organization throughout San Luis Obispo County. We urge you to take this opportunity to instruct the staff to develop ordinance amendments that will better coordinate the growth management ordinance and resource management system to advance the principles of smart growth that were adopted by the Board of Supervisors in June 2005. Smart growth encourages economic development, strength of community, and a healthy environment. Smart growth principles include a range of housing choices, a strong sense of place, strengthened development in existing communities, preservation of open space and agricultural land, a variety of transportation choices, and community collaboration. We need incentives for this development within established urban areas and to reverse the current growth patterns that are leading to sprawl throughout our rural areas. You have an opportunity before you today to address many of the serious issues we face. By encouraging smart growth, you can reduce traffic problems, increase our air quality, reduce greenhouse gases, conserve our water, reduce gasoline consumption, limit biological impacts, and increase public health. Please do not pass up this chance to protect our rural lands and our finite resources. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Jerry Bunin, followed by David Dugan.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I know you're not going to be shocked when I tell you that we don't really think the Growth Management Ordinance reflects reality. You're dealing on a one-year basis on a building industry that is constantly cyclical. It's about a seven-year cycle in terms of what's up and what's down, and having a 10% rollover makes no sense in that. I mean, if you look at the last 2 years, you're going to get about 100% of what you would have gotten in a two-year period. I think it was 60% and 33%. So it just doesn't really reflect how building is done. And a 10% rollover for 1 year is pretty inconsequential. I know you're not going to throw out the system, and I'm not going to encourage you to do that, because it would be a waste of my time and yours. But I do think you should rethink this whole process. I think what you should do is, instead of throwing away the 2.3%, take what's not used over a 3 to 5 year period, find the land where you really want to see workforce housing built, zone it at a realistic density that's going to make financial sense for someone to really build that project, make it predictable, do an EIR with the builder that you've got a project in mind, and you can actually get some workforce housing done in a way that's financially viable. Think about it down the road. I know you got amendments coming up with smart growth. I do have a question for something John said, but I'm going to hold that to, well, I'll ask my question now. It'll take up one of my 3 minutes. I wasn't quite understanding what you said. How many of the homes in the table one are affordable? And I thought all affordable homes are excluded. And I want to know if those percentages that I used a second ago reflect also secondary units and affordable units, and what the actual percentage under the growth management ordinance is without those two categories. So you can answer that in a second. The other two things I want to assure you with this thing coming up this weekend and while we're on this topic, and I know this is going to sound sarcastic, smart growth is a lot more than approving policies. It requires approving projects at densities that make financial sense to
to build in an infill environment. It's not the same thing. We find government and the community is very supportive of smart growth until you propose it, and then nobody wants it in their neighborhood. And also, I want to remind you, I share this thing about sprawl. It's one of my favorite lines. You probably heard me say it before. Builders build what government allows where government allows it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Last request to speak is David Dugan.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I think Bruce brought it out. There's a problem with Los Osos, and that's the PowerPoint also brought out a lot of the things I wanted to ask about. But I don't know whether or not this has been changed, but I believe the population expectation for Los Osos was in the high 20,000s. But I have been seeing numbers around 17,000 to 18,000, maybe 19,000 being talked about at the TAC. I want to have that clarified. What is the estimate for build-out for Los Osos is concerned as far as population growth? And we are in a severity 3 water rating, as Bruce pointed out. I didn't see anything about Los Osos in there, but I think that's something that needs to be really looked at. What is the expectation of what the community can afford? Can we import water, state water, or should we look at other sources of water? Infrastructure is a big deal, and, of course, that's the wastewater project, basically. But they are holding the numbers down to around 18,700, I believe, or something like that. I don't believe that we have the water yet, and I've been trying to get my advice to the TAC, the project team for Los Osos Water, for the reuse element, to also include once the Morro Bay puts in their new section of their wastewater, that perhaps we could find some way to get their affluent to us. And Los Osos would love to own their 2.5 million gallons a day. And that might help take care of problems and to find some way to treat all that water to where it's and put back into the community in such a way to where we can have people start to build sooner than later on the vacant lots in Los Osos. Because I truly believe that smart growth policies will restrict all the building to inside the urban reserve line in Los Osos, and there just seems to be not enough water. And I feel for these people who have single lots, but as well for the subdivisions, there'll have to be a certain way that those are done to where it doesn't put a greater strain on the pocketbook of the people of Los Osos, let alone the resources. Because if you get too many homes built in subdivisions, it's just going to cause a problem. You probably need to, instead of having some small lots, but maybe bigger lots, and somehow or another be able to mitigate some of the water resource problems through ordinances and such what that you guys have all been coming up with for retrofitting homes. And it is a fine balance between do we build a lot so we can retrofit a lot, or do we build within a reserve line to have them retrofit a lot of homes. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last request to speak, so we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Any additional questions from board, from staff members, or did you want Mr. Ufrat to start off with answering a couple of questions that were asked of him by public comment?
Let's do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Ufrat, planning staff. The first question had to do with the table on page 3, where we have a total of 368 dwelling units that were used this fiscal year, and that does not include affordable housing, and it does not include secondary homes, and of which that would be approximately another 200 on top of that. Second question had to do with Los Osos and population projections. And, you know, because of the existing resource deficiencies, both sewer and water, you're not going to be surprised on the fact that, you know, we estimate the population in Los Osos today to be about 14,200. And in 10 years, in 2015, it goes up a whopping 300 to about 14,500. And so ultimate build-out could potentially be much more than that, but that would be when there's new resources available.
Supervisor Gibson, do you want to lead off?
Yes, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ufrat, the question that I was asking, maybe I've figured out how to state it more plainly. We recently, well, first of all, within Los Osos, within the Prohibition Zone, we know the prohibition of discharge says there shall be no new units. But there, Los Osos is greater than simply the prohibition zone, and a good chunk of the community of Los Osos actually draws its water from the Los Osos groundwater basin, which we recently certified as in level of severity 3. And in response to that certification, we directed staff to look at a variety of measures that we might implement so that water use in Los Osos would be reduced. You know, the first one is, folks in Los Osos need to use less water today. But among the ways that we can encourage that is through a retrofit program that would demand that any new growth, any new development, actually reduce the overall amount by retrofitting other homes. And my question was, when do we expect to have that measure in place, and do we want to make sure that we bridge the gap between now, where that none of those requirements are in place, and the time in which we have those changes, with some changes to the growth or some indication in the growth management ordinance? For instance, should we amend the growth management ordinance to say 0% growth rate over the Los Osos groundwater basin unless development can show a net reduction in water used, or until the planning department has come back with measures that would institute that through Title 19 or something else?
John Ufrat, planning staff. I'll open it up, and then maybe I'll ask either Mr. Wilkin or Mr. Stevenson to come up. We have time scheduled with your board in July to discuss a host of options to deal with the RMS Level 3 in Los Osos. But, you know, some of those are actually already being implemented as we speak. For example, there are homes, as you mentioned, that can be built today. For example, there was one that had a minor use permit that I worked on 2 weeks ago that was up in the Cabrillo Estates area, and we added a condition in response to the Level 3 that indicated there would be no net increase in water use as a result of this new home being built. And there's maybe a few ways you could accomplish that, but retrofitting would be the only way that you would realistically be able to do that, to come out at a zero or less sum. And in this case, the applicant felt very confident they could do it, and it was approved. And so in my opinion, the majority of the homes that we see in Los Osos, which is a very small number, are going to be discretionary permits, and they're going to have that condition or something similar or even more stringent imposed upon it. So my initial opinion is we don't need to modify that growth rate now. But your board will actually have that option in July, if you wish, when you hear a whole host of options. But
let me just say, I think maybe we can solve it here. We would have the option to adjust the growth management ordinance as one of the tools.
That's correct.
Within
if it was introduced that way.
And under what triggers the requirement in these discretionary permits for conditions that show no net increase? Is that planning department policy? Is it board policy? Would it accomplish the force of law if this board directed staff to establish that policy in Los Osos? I want some certainty is
okay.
Where I'm headed here.
Staff's indicating it's actually a CEQA issue, and I think it's several things. So it's actually in response to the action that your board's already taken.
Yeah,
I mean, we've officially acknowledged.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past, several years ago, we thought it was just a sewer problem in Los Osos, and of course, we know now that is a daunting problem, but maybe even more daunting is their water supply issue. And so we're very aware of it. And so any permit that goes through our office where we have discretion, which will be the majority of the handful that we process each year, will have that condition or something even more serious attached to it.
And are you saying that all development within the groundwater basin is subject to a minor use permit? There are no ministerial permits out there?
No, I wouldn't go quite that far. I would say that I wish I had a number. Does anyone have a number? I think it's maybe at the most a dozen permits a year. Of those, I would say 80% of them would be discretionary. There could be a few ministerial ones that would not have that requirement. So I can't guarantee it. But it would be a very small number. And certainly a very small number between now and July, I think it's July 24th, that we're tentatively scheduled to be back to your board to discuss an array of options for dealing with the RMS Level 3 in Los Osos.
Right. I mean, I would be fine being on the record with direction from this board to planning staff to continue the no net no net increase, in fact, decrease
of
water usage. And I don't know if we need to formally add that to the resolution or...
My recollection was that a number of months ago we dealt with that issue about the certification. The recommendation of the board was that time is no net zero or zero increase, and it was retrofitting. But the issues that we ran into is that we can only basically take care of certain permits, but then also the CSD, who has the water permits, you know, need to be the one that is involved in making sure the retrofit program, very similar to what Cambria does.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a dual issue, and what we did is instruct staff at that time upon that certification.
I'll correct me if I'm wrong. I thought we directed staff to consider modifications to Title 19. Now, what before we get those modifications in place, I'd like to make sure we direct staff with whatever authority we have now to make that real in the interim before those Title 19 modifications are done.
Mr. Chairman, Tim McNulty with the County Council's Office. I think with regard to those discretionary permits that are subject to environmental review, the staff will be able to address the concern that Supervisor Gibson has with regard to the ministerial permits until such time as we actually amend Title 19 or something else. There isn't a way to impose a requirement on them. So it sounds like if Mr. Ufret's numbers are correct, you'll be able to capture about 80% of them between now and July 24th when you're scheduled to act. And, of course, there'll be a period of time following your action before whatever you do is effective. So add another 30 days to that.
Right. And the one other thing that I had talked to Mr. Stevenson about after our previous hearing was that there is noticing provisions where we can indicate changes are coming to Title 19 and applications that are received before those changes are made could be subject to the changes unless the permit's perfected. And I would ask whether that noticing has been done or could be done now. And so I would ask that we add direction to staff, again, as part of this resolution or however it needs to be done, to take both those steps so that we are tight on what we're accomplishing with this water reduction.
I think we're hearing you loud and clear.
Okay, thanks.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to raise an issue that Mr. Greening raised and then follow up with Mr. Bunin's comments regarding the actual numbers. And I don't know if that was completely cleared up, but Table 1 that shows our current year's allocations, total 1133 in the allowed, and we only use 368, but
correct.
As Mr. Ufret, you mentioned, 211 additional units were built that were exempt, and they would be added to the 368, giving us a total of 579. What I'm curious about, and I don't know if you have that information with you today, but I'm curious how many exempt units were built in previous years. It would be nice to include that in the presentation in the future, so we actually get a handle on how many homes are really being built. We don't know that now, and so it's not a realistic comparison. Did we build 200 exempt homes last year, or did we build 500? It would make a difference. It would be nice to know that, and I know Mr. Lilly has those numbers in planning, and it would be nice to see them because it gives us a more realistic measure of exactly what is being built. And then regarding Mr. Greening's comments about some of the other areas that have either level 3 or some other growth limitation, like Cambria, for example, we have a growth cap there of 0%, and I'm wondering if that actually needs to be included in the ordinance. Mr. Gibson talked about Los Osos, where we have a level 3, and they're not included. Is it a given that we'll continue with that cap until such time as it's changed? It doesn't need to be reflected in this ordinance. In the growth management mm-hmm. ordinance. We don't need to reflect those specifically.
John Ufret, planning staff. For Los Osos, for example, I mean, that
right, Los Osos and Cambria.
Yeah, I mean, Cambria is reflected. Cambria has continued to be shown as a 0% growth rate, which we would expect to be in place probably for the next 10 to 15 years, until such time as they have a new source of water. Los Osos is a little harder to determine. We don't have quite as much background on it, but I think, you know, we will bring that forward. It's not proposed for a 0% as of today, but again, it's a very small number of homes that go through, and your board will have that option in July if you wish to exercise it.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Obit.
Thank you. I guess constructive criticism should be probably just starting off and make everybody feel better at the end. There is a lack of information in this document. The last chart, actually on page D16, really didn't show anything. It showed that the number of permits that were requested, but the kind of information, and you touched on it briefly with your PowerPoint, was the trend.
The trend line, right.
And none of that was in here, so people, the questions are being asked, are these trends? What has happened? The other issue here is, and I think Jerry Bunin probably brought it up, the issue is that you will see in these trends, not countywide, but you will also see them from north to south. There's different trends, east-west, and that kind of thing. That is not an information in here that would give you a better picture of what this growth management document really is. Now, the growth management document serves two purposes. One, it is a information document. It gives us the information of what is happening. And the other side of it is a document that says how many units can we expect. There's some information differences here. The countywide growth rate is on units at 2.3. That's building units. Our growth rate last year was 1.5%. That was population. But the maximum population, I think, was in the city of Paso Robles at a little over 2%. So, again, you know, we have to, apples and oranges we're dealing with. And that's why I bring up this issue on those 3 points of 3, 4, and 5. It kind of counterdict number 2, where it says, make this thing simpler. You know, keep it KASS, keep it simple, and now we're going to add more into it. And the reason I caution this is not the issues of growth management, not the issue of smart growth or that. It's the issue that when you start allocating numbers, you do two things. One is more exemptions doesn't really show you how many actual growth units, number of units you're building. Jim Patterson brings up, even today, we haven't even reached the total number 2.3 if you add the exemptions in. And in many years, with exception about 3 or 4, that's the case. Even with low-cost housing and everything, we never reached that 2.3. The other issue is when you start this allocation, such as you see with multifamily and single family, and a case arises off and on in the Pomo now, that you do not have enough units to be able to build to make it economically feasible to meet that kind of demand, and specifically in multifamily units. We've run into that a couple of cases in the South County. So I want to be very cautious that in those three areas where you start moving things into growth management, it's going to complicate it, not make it simpler. And the whole issue with this growth management is an indicator to let us know when we should apply or how we should look at the future based on trends. Now, the other thing about it, the resource management is exactly the same thing. It is an indicator of what the issues are. And if you start moving it too much into the growth management issue, you understand, as this organization is process generated. And we do have to go through certifications. We do have to go through processes in order to certify certain issues before we can then reflect it back in any kind of ordinances or any other thing that would affect the growth management. So there's just areas that I caution you. And the other one that kind of, the interpretation was used that all of this growth was happening in the rural area. Now, you didn't define rural. Was it the rural unincorporated or communities of urban or village areas of where they're happening? Because, and Mr. Greening did the same thing. He said, We took these 2,000 units, but they were countywide, and the majority of those were to be looked at in urban areas that had this, had the basic resources to provide that. And so, again, I just caution, when you start using these words, the definitions need to be more specific, because it leaves this broad, open-ended thing that really doesn't define what's really going on out there. And the last one I'll deal with, when you say secondary units, we have a thing later on today that talks about that only 10% of the rural lands even put in secondary units. So it'd be interesting, if these 200 units, where were they going? Mm. You know, are they going in urban village areas, or are they going out in the rural residential lands? Because one statistic tells me one thing, and you're telling me another thing that don't correlate. So I think the information that needs to be presented in this thing has to be much more detailed so that we can honestly look at what's really happening. And that's all I got to say. Other than that, go forward.
Supervisor Osagio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. One for the council. If a person from Los Osos comes to us with a will-serve letter from their CSD, what are our obligations, considering that we want zero loss of any resources?
Supervisor Sajjan, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. As you know, the will-serve letter would be a requirement prior to the issuance of the building permit. So
can we still challenge the person with what we want to have in place if they do come to us with a will-serve letter?
The will-serve letter doesn't obligate the county to approve something in violation of its own regulations, but it is a prerequisite in order to get a building permit.
Okay.
Thank you. My other
question for our staff, when you come back in July, is there any effort from our behalf to work with the CSD folks in Los Osos so that we are cooperating and they're not issuing will-serve letters and we're being challenged here that I do have water, how dare you not give me the permit?
Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. We are working with the purveyors in Los Osos, making them aware of the need for conservation. I think Mr. McNulty answered the question relative to the will serve. We're still obligated in those areas that are outside the prohibition area to evaluate those that are discretionary with CEQA. And so based on your board certification of level 3 for water in Los Osos, we're looking at a zero-sum game in terms of the water use.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I move staff's recommendation.
I'll second, but I'd like to, if you read the recommendation, they stop with their suggestion that we direct them to move forward with ordinance amendments relative to connecting better connectivity with the resource management system. And I would like to add, and the principles of smart growth, which is what they delineated in their staff report that they'd like to evaluate.
My understanding is that we're going to deal with that in July, so.
No, that's
in July we're going to review the resource management system.
For Los Osos.
I think the body of the report basically mentions smart growth. I tend to want to stay away from using the exact word smart growth, because what happens is, and in the information I'm reading now about smart growth and all these people that are coming through, there's an issue of application. And what you have in the county is a diversity of how to apply smart growth principles. And in some cases, Jerry brings it up, it happened in Templeton, we tried to apply it, the community went crazy, they didn't want it, for whatever reason. So I think it's how we apply it needs to be discussed, and I think when these ordinances come through in the future and how they're directed at resource management or how they're directed at growth management, they need to be looked on a case-by-case. I don't have any argument with the overall concept of smart growth, but it's the application that's driving it, and that needs to be. I think there's some public education that's going to have to be done. There's a lot of that before we start actually just laying it in, and I know that part of our growth our smart growth presentation has been what will be the future applications, and we need to see those.
How does that differ from what we have in NEPOMO?
John Ufrat, planning staff. Well, NEPOMO, we actually have a program specifically for NEPOMO that where you get extra credit or there's more lenient application of the ordinance if it is a smart growth project. And that's one of the things that we would probably suggest or look at countywide. There's no reason why it should be just focused in Napomo. I mean, it could equally apply in the North County or North Coast, presuming you have resources available.
And I refer to number 5 in staff's report, which is part of this motion.
Right. Well, actually, it's not part of the motion unless you include the recommendation that they look at these.
I don't want to argue. I just want to clarify when you go back on that page where the 5 or 6 items are presented.
There's 6 items, right.
And staff recommends that you go forward with looking at items 1 and 2, which is normal, and then 3 through 6, continue that and bring it back in forms of ordinances. So it is referenced as far as our...
Well, it's referenced, but it's not in the recommendation of the staff report specifically for the motion. And the language on page D14, they do include it, and that's all I was doing. It was including it in the motion where it says resource management system and with the adopted principles of smart growth. And if you look at the recommendation, that isn't included, and I was just adding that language.
Let's back up. What is the staff's understanding of what you're recommending and what we're talking about?
I don't think, John Euphrat, planning staff, it's not critical in the actual motion, I think, because, I mean, Supervisor Overt is correct on page 5, item number 5 at the top. We ask or comment that we're going to explore ways to better link the growth management ordinance with smart growth principles. So we're
that's
getting the direction loud and clear based on that. And so if it's in the motion, that's fine. And if it's not, that's okay, too. It's one of the things we'll look at and bring back to your board with a range of options.
And Supervisor Gibson, before I go to you, I want to make sure, is the motion maker clear? Because I don't think under discussion the second was entirely in line with the motion maker. So before we go much farther, I'd like to have you restate your motion so the clerk doesn't have a confused look in her face, and then we see if we have a second before we go any farther.
I think that's why I asked what was staff's understanding with my motion and what I heard Mr. Euphrat say now, I'm thinking it addresses the issue Mr. Patterson raises.
Does the second concur?
It's simple. My motion is what's recommended.
Okay.
Does the second concur with that?
As long as staff agrees that we're including those other items.
Okay.
So we have a motion by Supervisor Sajjan, second by Supervisor Patterson. Under discussion, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Supervisor Ovid, I would only say that the application or implementation of smart growth depends on how we vote on this board and how our planning commission votes. That's where application and implementation get carried. I would only...
Also, re-election does take effect of who sits on this board and application. I'm not arguing the point. I'm saying is that if you go back in history, we've gone through the Iwani principles, now we've gone to smart growth. In the next 5 or 6 years, we're going to come up with something else. And the difficulty that smart growth principles are dealing with today is the application of existing communities and the infill issues, and that is something that's being addressed. And that's how we have to be when we look at this. We can't just be hard-nosed or hard-lying. We have to look at its application.
Absolutely, and it's a matter in these conferences of political will. I would embrace Supervisor Patterson's idea that I'd like to very much see the growth management ordinance address what we have adopted as a board of smart growth principles. So the term, which was also a concern of Supervisor Ovid, the term smart growth has been used by this board to adopt and incorporate a certain set of principles that I think will make a large difference to the quality of life in this county. So I will support the motion. I think staff does have the clear direction. And again, I would just like to emphasize that at least by inference, direction to staff on the two specific issues in Los Osos is included in this action as well. Are we?
See affirmative nod.
Yes. Staff clear.
Yes.
It's not part.
I think the message is there, and staff has taken direction.
Okay.
Madam Clerk, question or comment?
I have a question. I'm sorry, regarding the motion. When you're referring to the staff development for future ordinance amendments regarding consideration for operational efficiency, that is the 1 through 6 that's on page D14 and 5, correct?
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that.
That's correct.
And I think that's why it addresses the issue Mr. Patterson brings forward.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Clerk, if you're clear, a roll call when you're ready.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Lindvall.
Aye. Mr. Lindholm, I'd like you to make a note. This is the first of 15 meetings we've had this year. We're actually ahead of schedule, and because of that, we're going to take a 14-minute break.
Okay, we're doomed now.
Take an extra 2 or 3 minutes, Jim, during the break there, so I'm learning from you. Also, I failed to mention this morning that it's the supervisor's birthday here, so I want everyone to know that Bruce Gibson's birthday. We want to wish him a happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
You can officially get his AARP card.
Yeah. Well, you know, 55 is a good age. It's a speed also that I did not exceed on my bike to work yesterday.
Downhill.
Okay. I apologize for not announcing your birthday when there are more people here. But
no, that's just fine.
Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Board's next item is E1, a presentation of the county road policies, all districts.
Mr. Brady, are you going to be our only speaker today?
Well, I'll be your first speaker today. I'm Glenn Pretty. I am your Deputy Director of Public Works for Engineering Services. I will be giving the presentation today. Also in the audience are Richard Marshall, our Development Services Engineer, and Dave Flynn, our Traffic and Transportation Engineers. The discussion will go into some of the fields that they cover, and so they're here to help me and answer questions and whatnot.
And they won't even push the buttons for you on the computer?
I can do that myself. That's why I'm sitting here.
One-minute show.
I will speak from here, and I have quite a few slides. So I'll try to go rather rapidly. If something comes up you want to stop me on, let me know. If I'm going too fast or slow, let me know. First of all, we're going to be going over road programs and policies, and at the end we'll be talking a little bit about some suggested new policies. I want to tell you that this is not our department performance profile, like you've been seeing from most of the departments. We do have one scheduled. If you'd like to give us credit for that, we would accept it for this presentation.
We'll see how your presentation goes, and the board will decide whether you get credit.
The county operates 1,300 miles of roads in the unincorporated area of the county. State Streets and Highways Code requires that the board provide policy direction and set the policies and priorities for the road system. And then the County Public Works Director and Director of Transportation carries out those policies. Today we're going to give you an overview of the roads programs, and we're going to talk about funding priorities. We're going to talk about some existing policies, and then we'll talk about some new policies. So we'll get right started. Programs we're going to talk about today are the programs that operate and administer the county road system. First, we have our maintenance program. Our roads must be continually maintained, keep them safe, and to protect the investment that the people of the county have in these road systems. Our pavement management program is also a large program, and it has this similar reason for existing. We have about 1,200 miles of paved road, and our pavement deteriorates over time, and we have to keep it up so that the roads will be safe and to protect our investment. We have a bridge replacement program. We have about 200 bridges in our road system. The road system doesn't function unless the bridges are there and safe to drive across. Luckily, we have a good federal program that helps us pay for a lot of that, and we'll be discussing that a little bit. We have our planning and operations program. This is Dave Finn's bailiwick. That helps us plan, the improvement of the system, and to improve the safety of the system. And then we have the capital improvement program, and that is basically builds things, builds projects to implement the other programs. This slide is just to show that these programs aren't discrete. They overlap, and they all interconnect, and they all affect each other. You won't see the development services here. Richard's people are our connection to the development community for the road system, and they are part of this entire process. We also have a large administration and financial management function that makes all this work. So maintenance. These are generally our road crews. We have, I think, about 65 people on our road crews. And they are the people that come out in the middle of the night, in the rain, after the earthquake, during the fire, and keep the road system open. They provide a great emergency response, and they're very dedicated people. They also, and more routinely, perform pavement repair. They operate, or they maintain our gravel roads. We got a couple hundred miles of gravel roads, or 100 miles or so. They do minor reconstruction projects. They maintain drainage and shoulders of the road. They maintain sidewalks, bike lanes. They maintain our traffic control devices. We have a crew doing tree and vegetation control, bridges and structures, and environmental mitigation. We actually have our own native plant nursery where we grow native plants for mitigation. This slide shows why we're really here today, and it's showing that the cost of providing maintenance is growing more rapidly than the dedicated revenue sources we have to pay for it. And we need to do something. We're going to talk about ways to try to bring these curves closer together. One of the things we do, obviously, one of our larger costs is staffing. So in response to the increasing costs, a few years ago, we decreased staff in our maintenance crews. Over a couple years period, we reduced by 8 staff members. You can see that during that time, the miles we maintain slowly creeps up as we accept new roads. This reduction in staff, after we did that, we noticed that there was some losses of efficiency in the way our staff worked, because sometimes with smaller crews, you can't get the right number of people all at once to do what you need to do on a given day. If somebody gets sick, somebody's on vacation, you end up with not enough people to do what you need to do. So in a way to deal with that, we experimented with consolidating two of our crews. A few years ago, we combined the two North County crews into one. So at this time, this is the way our regional crews are configured. We have one crew doing everything north of the grade. Then we have one crew doing from San Luis Obispo to North Coast, and we have doing one from Avila to Napomo. This map shows those boundaries, and it also shows it's kind of a good map to show the extent of the system we operate. The numbered streets you see are the state highway system. Those are the roads we don't maintain those roads. The dark brown areas are the cities. We don't maintain those roads. Almost all the rest of the publicly maintained roads in the county are ours. We found when we combined the North County crews that it worked. It helped us. It allowed us to have more flexible crew sizes. It gave us more efficient use of equipment. The more vertical management structure helped us improve standardization. We have few people directing the work. We can find the best way to do things and stick that, and it improved communication. With that success, we have decided we're going to do the same thing in the South County. Beginning at the end of 2007, we will consolidate our two South County crews into one. and we'll end up with two major crews, one in the north, one in the south. This will be the new configuration. Obviously, we've got a mountain range that crosses our county, and that's a geographic barrier that makes it sense to split up this way. When this happens, we currently in North County, our road yard is in Paso Robles. We also have a satellite road yard in the California Valley, and we have a small crew that reports out there. And then when they need to get together, they all get together and can do major jobs. We'll have a similar arrangement in the South County. Our main road yard will be at Camp San Luis Obispo. We currently have a satellite yard in Cambria and a crew that works out of Cambria. What has been our South County yard, that crew will remain there, but it will be managed and directed by the one individual, and they will work in the South County. When we need more staff in the South County, we can bring more staff from the other areas, and when the other areas need more staff, they'll go up there. Well, for now, we'll be using our existing road yard in Rio Grande. We are looking for a site for a satellite yard in the Napomo area, which is where most of our work takes place in the South County. As you can see on the previous slide, we call them sections 1 and 3. That makes sense to us. We may in the future call them north and south, east and west, but right now we'll stick with 1 and 3. We also have three countywide specialty crews. Our major maintenance crew takes care of bridges and structures. Our traffic crew takes care of signs and painting, delineation. And our tree crew takes care of trees and vegetation. These three crews they operate out of Camp San Luis, but their jurisdiction is countywide. Our next program is the pavement management program. This is a very important program because why do we maintain the pavement? Because it improves vehicle safety. You might see a theme here. We think about safety a lot in the road system. We reduce the vehicle operating costs to the public because rough roads cause increased vehicle operation costs. And if we don't maintain the roads, they fall apart. They deteriorate, and it costs a lot more to put them back together if they're not properly maintained at the right time. Treatment systems we use asphalt overlay and chip seal. We try to treat about 50 miles a year, if possible. Our performance measures for our pavement system, we use a system of pavement condition rating. Basically, it's a pretty simple system. A brand new, newly paved road is rated at 100. A completely deteriorated road is zero, and we send crews out, people out, and inventory the roads and make it's a judgment call on what the classification is. Our target is to have all roads, the average of all the roads, at 70. We also have a sub-target of all of our classifications. We classify our roads as arterial, collector, and local. We don't want any one of those classifications going below 60. We want to bring all the roads up and maintain them at a reasonable level. And we choose and we select the roads to be worked on a cost-benefit ratio, and that is that we give extra weight to the roads that are more heavily traveled. Can't talk about pavement management without showing the pavement life cycle curve. This curve shows that the condition rating drops off over time. It drops off slowly at first, so you get a 40% drop in quality in the first 75% of the life. But then it drops off very rapidly. And we intend, our goal is set, and our pavement system is set so that we reach a point about here, and then we work on it, and we bring it back up. And we try to keep away our roads from getting into this point where $1 of rehab here costs $4 or $5 down here. And this happens over a very short period of time. So we try to catch our roads up in here. Ideally, every 7 years or so, we chip seal them. That brings the curve back up and starts almost over again. Goes down, chip seal it again. After doing that a couple times, it then is time to do an AC overlay. AC overlay starts brings it back up to 100 and starts over again. And by doing that, we avoid the very expensive complete rebuild that happens if you let the roads go too far. How are we doing? Right now we're doing pretty well. Our condition rating is just under 70. We have to continue doing it because it's a dynamic system. The roads keep deteriorating, and we have to keep working on them. Our next program is the bridge replacement program. As I said, we have 200 bridges. We have a good program. Of course, we do this to ensure that the bridges are safe and they have the capacity, both hydraulic and operational vehicle-wise, to operate the road system. We try to replace one bridge a year. We had several years where we replaced none. This year we've got two going. This is a good program. We have a federal program that pays for over 80% of the cost of this. The bridge is very expensive. It still takes a lot just to do the local match on them. These are the bridges we've been working on since 2003. You can see there are many of them all over the county. There's 12 on this map. We have completed seismic retrofitted Higuera Street, River Road, San Isidro River in San Miguel, Los Politas Road Bridge east of Santa Margarita, and just last year we did the Turi Road Bridge off of Los Osos Valley Road. This is the Los Politas Bridge. It's a very good project. Right now, we're working on the San Luis Bay Drive Bridge. Everybody knows we've had a lot of publicity about that. It's now being demolished. We have just awarded the contract for the Pocasio Road Bridge outside of Cayucas. It'll start construction June 1st. We have two bridges slated for next year up San Simeon Creek. These are small bridges. They're close together. We'll probably let those as one contract. If everything goes right, bridges are very, very fickle getting these projects through, and there's a lot of things that can derail them. So right now we're on track for these bridges to go next year. We also have a Moonstone Beach Drive Bridge in Cambria that we're working on, hopefully for next year. In 2009, we have the Main Street Bridge at Santa Rosa Creek in Cambria, and we have two bridges on Price Canyon for the widening project we're doing there. These are widening these bridges. Those will probably go as one contract. Bridges, our performance measure for bridges is sufficiency rating. That's a measure of the quality of the bridge. Our bridges are inspected by Caltrans. Their engineers come out down here and rate each of our bridges. And they come up with a sufficiency rating. Basically, anything over or anything below 50, although it's still safe, it's eligible for the federal program. And so we try to keep our bridges, 90% of our bridges, above a sufficiency rating of 50. That doesn't mean that they're 50 doesn't mean that they're dangerous or anything. It just means that the federal government recognizes it's time to do something with them. Our next program I want to talk about is operations and planning, traffic operations, transportation planning, and in that division that Dave Flynn heads, we also do transportation project management. Our traffic operations analyzes traffic statistics and accident statistics and flow analysis in trying to find ways to make the road system safer. Some of the things they use are road delineation and signing, striping, minor things at this level, then this builds up into the capital project system. These are our performance measures for our collisions. We have four different things we look at. We look at suburban roads, rural roads, signalized intersections, and non-signalized intersections. The targets we use are the state target, the state measures on the state highway system. This is what they're attaining, and we use that as our target. As you can see, our suburban roads are trending in the right direction. Rural roads are a problem nationwide. Everybody who maintains rural roads is having trouble with rural road safety, and we continually try to make our rural roads safer to get this to trend in the right direction. Our signalizing and all of our intersections are doing well with respect to our targets. Transportation planning, we look at analyzing the traffic capacity of the road system. We have a traffic count program where we continually monitor what the traffic is at various places in our road system. We do circulation studies to find out what needs to be done to improve the capacity. Those circulation studies are then blended into our development fee program. We also use this information in the county's resource management system. We monitor, I think, 20 roads for that system. If the level of service is D or is going to become D, then we start capital projects to try to improve that level of service. We also have our transportation project managers. They're regional. We have one for North County, one for South County, one for North Coast, one for the Abilene area, or the San Luis area. Their job is to guide the schedule, scope, and budget of capital projects for the transportation division. They communicate with the public. They attend the advisory committee meetings and keep a dialogue going with the public on these issues. And they also work with our own in-house staff, and they direct and review consultants' work on making these project our capital projects happen. Our fifth program is the capital improvement program. I'm not going to list all of the projects we're working on. I want to finish sometime today. But these are some of the funding sources, and you can see how complicated it can be to get these projects going, because many of our projects use a multitude of various combinations of funding sources. All the funding sources have their different criteria and their deadlines and things like that have to be analyzed. So this is some of them. These are more of the funding sources that we use. One of these I want to highlight is Prop 1B. This was just passed by the state last November. It's still in the process of being manipulated and whatnot, so that we can see exactly what our share is going to be. I'll go over some of the projects we are planning to use that money for in the next 5 years. We're anticipating getting almost $12 million. That's still to be determined. The formula we think they're going to use is going to give this, and it'll be used to build operations and safety improvements on our road system. We're unsure about how much money we're going to get when. The legislature has a bill going through that would give us half the money in 2008, half the money in 2010. This governor's rewrite of the May revise of the budget yesterday has a different formula that the governor has been proposing, which would give us less money and to begin with, and then stretch out the money longer. Whichever way it comes, we're going to have a short time to perform with this money. What I've seen is we will get it. We'll have 3 years to spend it, or they'll take it away. And given the complexity of projects, that's going to be a challenging thing to do. Some of the projects we're going to be looking at, Templeton Road realignment, part of it. We'll be looking at extension of Los Sabalos to Main Street in Templeton. Looking at improvements at the intersection of Nosemia Lake Drive and Chimney Rock in Adelaide. Look at improvements at River Road widening and curve correction in San Miguel. Los Osos Valley Road, Palisades Signal, Foothill Signal capacity improvements, and pedestrian enhancements in Los Osos. Looking at Ramona Avenue realignment in Los Osos, Charing Lane reconstruction in Cambria, Buckley Road, the extension of Buckley Road to Higuera Street, and curve correction near the behind the San Luis Airport at Kink on Buckley Road. Looking at Orchard Road, realignment and bike lanes. This would be vertical alignment near Brigetti Road. Orchard in South County, south of Southland and Napoma. Los Barros Road, left turn lane at Dale Avenue. El Camino Real, turn pockets at Carmel and Santa Clara. And then also enhancing, supplementing the pavement management program, providing local match for the bridge replacement program and for traffic operations, completing the conversion of our signals to LED lighting, and part of our asset management really is our GIS system implementation. We may be using some of the money for that. That's some of the things we're thinking about doing. So those are our programs. Next thing I want to talk about, if I can still keep talking, is our expenditure priorities for expending the discretionary money that we do get to operate our road system.
Glenn, is I haven't seen it. I didn't get a chance to read the May rewrite, but are they still playing games about whether we're a tax county or whether we have dedicated fees?
I believe that really was not so much in the May rewrite, but it's in the legislation. And last I heard is we won't be getting that. This is for the state and local partnership part of the 1B. Budget, the bill that's going through makes that available only to self-help counties. So the only matching money you can get is if it comes from a voter-approved tax. The money I was talking about is for the $2 billion that's given to local roads, to cities and counties.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So our expenditure priorities generally are maintenance first. Obviously, this is to save our investment, but mainly also maintenance is safety. And our second priority is safety. And our third priority is betterments, improving capacity, making things that are new and not and different. This is also shows that these are not discrete priorities. They overlap each other. Betterments do maintenance. Some maintenance things are betterments. And everything is related to safety. Our maintenance priority basically improves public safety, reduces vehicle operation costs, and maximizes cost benefit for our road system. Our funding sources for dedicated directly to maintenance are mainly gasoline tax, some little bit of property tax, and the general fund is what's making up that gap between those two curves I showed you earlier. This is a picture of a maintenance project. These aren't our staff. This is the putting up the netting on the hillside above Burton Drive in Cambria that we have a problem with it sloughing down onto the road. This is a project that was done recently completed, and I put it in because I think it's a spectacular picture. Traffic safety is our second priority, obviously. Safety is our highest priority always, but we have external dedicated external funds. Safe Routes to School program is a federal program. It's dedicated to safety at schools, and we use the State Transportation Improvement Program for safety projects also. Internally, we have gas tax and general fund that go to these types of projects. This is a safety project. This is 16th Street, San Miguel. We had a dedicated federal money to build this sidewalk between Mission Street and Lillian Larson Elementary School up the hill. Betterments, although this is third priority, betterments is really a very large program for us because we get non-discretionary dedicated money to do it. We use this to increase traffic capacity, new bicycle and pedestrian facilities, upgrade the roadway system. That refers to our cooperative road program. And then we have a program of enhancing downtown business areas that we work with the planning department. We have dedicated fees from road impact fees, regional funding, various types of grants, and the cooperative road program. This is a capacity improvement project, used development fees and other dedicated funds to improve the capacity under the Highway 101 underpass at Los Tablas Road in Templeton. This is a bicycle betterment program. This is the El Moro bike path in Los Osos. Speaking of bikes, this just shows the number of bike lane miles we have constructed in the last 10 years. About 30 miles of bike lanes and about 5 or 6 miles of sidewalks. The community enhancement programs is a discretionary program, some grants and other funding to improve the downtown areas of various communities. We work with the Planning and Building Department. The Planning and Building initiates the projects. Our department constructs and implements the projects. We are working doing pretty well with our communication between the two departments. It's a growing thing. This is the Tef Street Enhancement Program in Old Town Napomo, completed a few years ago. We get to the policies, existing policies. I mean, maintain in kind. That means that if the road's gravel, it stays gravel unless we find some dedicated funding to pave it. We don't use maintenance money to improve it. This is the current policy for accepting roads. Any road that's constructed to current county standards, it's offered for dedication to the public and open to the public. And accesses more than 5 parcels. It's currently our policy to accept those roads into the maintained road system. I'll be talking about proposed change to that policy later. Abandoning roads if they're unnecessary for public use or have little use, we recommend them to be abandoned. We use this mainly for paper streets where people come in and ask for them to be abandoned. Landscape and lighting funding. As you can see, we don't have enough funding to take on additional programs. There's currently more and more the areas want landscaping, lighting. We will help them do that, but it has been the board policy for many years that an entity be established to maintain those facilities, that would be designated during the planning stage and that would be in place before the design stage of the project. This is still a challenge to make this happen, but this is our policy. New policies that we'd like you to consider. Well, I guess, why are we asking for new policies? Back to this is the same curve I showed you before. We have a gap between the cost of our maintenance and the revenues to pay for it. That are dedicated specifically for it, and trying to find ways to bring these curves closer together, to reduce or to maintain the costs and to increase the revenues. This shows you the mileage that has been added to the system in the last 10 years. We've had about 30 miles added in the last 10 years. It costs about over $11,000 a mile now to maintain a road. That gets them to some fairly serious money over time. We're bringing in about, as I said, about 3 miles a year. So, talking about accepting new roads into the maintained system. We recommend that we come up with a new policy to not accept roads that are in large lot or rural subdivisions that are new. Those are not cost-effective for us to maintain. And we would recommend that when these kinds of subdivisions happen, that they be conditioned to form their own maintenance entity to provide for maintenance themselves. We would continue to accept roads in the fill-in areas in the urban areas and in smaller subdivisions. But we recommend that we require new subdivisions to form maintenance districts, right? Either county service areas or some other type of maintenance district, to provide to help pay for the ongoing maintenance of the new road. This would be for new subdivisions and also for new cooperative road projects where they're upgrading the system and causing more maintenance costs. Those are the two that we recommend. We also been asked by your board at your one of your strategic planning sessions about a year ago to look into the possibility of road extension agreements. Road extension agreements would allow reimbursement to developers for the cost of road improvements that are off-site from their project. We currently, if a development is happening or subdivision is happening that is not on a paved, maintained standard road, we require them to build a safe road that's acceptable between them and the next and the closest county road. And then it's conceivable that other development could come in between them and the county road and take advantage of that. This would allow us to charge that new development, the second development, and help pay off the first developer. This is allowable under state law. It is only used in one county right now. Butte County uses it, and they don't use it very much. And it would require a county ordinance to implement something like this. So our recommendations, first of all, I would like you to consider these. We're not really asking you to adopt anything right now. We want you to give us guidance, and we will take that guidance and come back to your board with more fleshed out policies in the future in response. So our recommendation is that we limit the acceptance of new roads and that we require maintenance districts to pay for the roads we do accept in the system. Road extension agreements, we're neutral on that. If your board wants to do it, we will put it together for you. I want you to confirm there are other existing policies and let us know what you want. This is finally the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Bring it back to the board. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Chairman Linthal. I do have some questions for Mr. Priddy. Glenn, you mentioned in the future you anticipate cutting your road maintenance crews from 3 to 2, and I was curious when that was going to happen and if there would actually be an additional staffing reduction due to that consolidation, because you did mention that when you went from 4 to 3, you did have a significant staffing reduction and you were able to actually become more efficient utilizing that model. And I was curious if, again, when you go from 3 to 2, if you're anticipating having any staff reductions.
No, we're not. We are basically still responding to the staff reductions we had in the past and trying to catch up with that. So we feel that with the new organization that we will be more efficient. But we're not anticipating the ability to reduce staff any further at this point.
Okay.
And when it's going to happen, probably December of this year, right, towards the end of the year.
Good. Thank you, and I appreciate those efforts to improve efficiency. You mentioned having a goal of 50 miles per year in terms of maintaining the roads. Are you successful in achieving that goal, or have you been?
Dave, you have a number on that?
Dave Flynn with Public Works. Generally, our program has been about 25 to about 35 miles an hour, 35 miles of road a year in combined chip seal and asphalt overlay. It's been very difficult getting the chip seal materials in the county now, and that's really prevented us from getting like an additional 15 miles of road treated a year. And we're trying to make provisions to stockpile that material ourselves so that we can be more aggressive on getting 15 to 20 miles an hour, 20 miles a year chip seal, particularly in the residential neighborhoods in Napomo and Templeton that are about 20, 25 years old that really need that.
Mr. Flynn, if we are only able to achieve that 25 to 35 mile per year average, are we going to be able to maintain our 70% goal of having the quality of roads that we want, or will we gradually lose ground?
We're on a course to gradually lose ground, particularly on the rural collector roads in the North County, because there's so many miles of them. And a lot of those roads are very low traffic volumes, Shell Creek Road, roads connecting like San Miguel with points to the east. And those are ones that are kind of on a cycle to deteriorate, and then we're going to have to make a significant investment on those roads. We've been doing very good on arterial roadways because on a cost-benefit basis, we've invested heavily in those, and those should be in good condition for the next 10 to 15 years. But just the number of mileage we have, particularly in the North County for those collector roads, is something that we're always going to have to continually invest in to try to catch up and use innovative kind of techniques to repave the road, maybe look at recycling, those type of means, so that we can better utilize the materials. Because really when we talk about these overlays, chip seals, or asphalt, it's all about where we get the materials, how we have to haul the materials in so that we can resurface a roadway.
Thank you. Mr. Pretty, I was out on Las Politas Road on Saturday and crossed the new bridge, but noticed the old bridge just downstream. And I actually took a walk out on that bridge, and there's a sign that it's an historic bridge, I think constructed in about 1905, early in the century, and I was just curious. There's a lot of steel in that bridge, and I was curious, or I am curious to know if that's just going to stay there, or if there are plans to dismantle it, or what will happen with that bridge.
The leaving that bridge there was a requirement of the environmental process for the new bridge. Mm-hmm. And it is historic, and it is a dedicated pedestrian and bicycle path, and it's going to stay there.
Okay, good. Thank you. A couple more questions, Mr. Chairman, if I may. You mentioned over the last 10 years constructing better than 30 miles of bike lanes, and I'm curious to know if that's class 1, 2, 3, or a combination of all three. And when you just post a sign saying bike route, which is, I guess, a class 3, I think. Do you count that?
Dave, you want to take that one?
Dave Flynn with Public Works. Those would reflect the class 2 mileage that's been created really over the last 10 years, and that's been through aggressive grants we've received, as well as utilizing the road impact fees that we get in particular communities to develop those bike lanes. Bike routes were something that was established in the county beginning in the early mid-90s, and those signs are throughout the county but don't really constitute the bike network that we're creating.
Okay, so the bike lanes are actually striped and marked on
yes.
the pavement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Mr. Pretty, you commented that in that one chart where you were illustrating the escalating cost of road construction, you mentioned it costs about $11,000 per mile, and you said to maintain them, but was that to construct them or to maintain
them? Just to maintain them.
Just to maintain them?
Yes.
Okay. In that program where periodically you chip seal and then...
Yeah, that's our crews and the asphalt, our overlay program.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all the questions I have now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on that a little bit of math. At $11,500 per mile to maintain times 50 miles, it seemed to me I was seeing your maintenance needs and budget were in the millions of dollars, $8 million revenue in 16.
The number of 11,000 miles includes both our county forces maintenance and the pavement management program. Pavement management program is what, about $5-6 million a year, and the county forces maintenance is about, I think, about $11 million a year. I think it's a total of about $16-17 million a year.
Okay, and between pavement management and county forces, we're trying to take care of 50 miles?
We're trying to take care of all 1,300 miles.
All 1,300 miles. So many more miles than just the 50 get the maintenance treatment.
That's
I just couldn't make the math.
Right. The 50 is for the is our annual, what we try to bite off to do our pavement management on each year, 50 of those of those 1,200 that are paved.
Okay, I guess we could get down to the math that I saw 50 times 11,000 a mile, 11,500 a mile, didn't quite come up to the millions, but that's a math problem we can work on.
Yes, 1,200 times.
Okay. Okay. Then the cost, you had the diverging curve, the ominous diverging curve that we look at all the time in government, and you had the upper curve labeled cost. Is that what you need to get the job done, or is that what you're actually spending to get
it? So we're actually spending. The difference between the two curves is a general fund contribution.
Is a general fund contribution. Okay. And that's it for me for now.
Thank you. See no other lights. We'll open to the public. First request to speak is Jerry Bunin, followed by Eric Greening.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. Although a personal note, I live on a county street. You should drive it sometime. I live on Paso Robles Street in Oceano. If you come in the summer, you think you're on a roller coaster. If you come in the winter, you think you're in the land of a thousand lakes. You can stop by and I'll make you a cup of coffee and you can meet my dogs. We're not against either the road maintenance district or the road extension agreement, but we do always hope that they be fair and that they be equitable and that you divide the cost between the existing residents and the new users based on the usage rate, and don't put the entire burden on the new home owner and the maintenance district. And I'm just curious as a question, is if you're going to put a tax on that for the new person, how is that going to fix your existing problem with maintenance unless you're going to do this countywide? Because I'm guessing that your charges are going up for even the other 1,300 road miles of road that you're maintaining. On the road extension agreements, again, we're reasonably supportive, but I always worry about when I read a 10-page staff report that we're going to wind up with a really bureaucratic solution that's going to require the adding two or three members of staff on our part to understand it. Again, we'd like to see it be fair and proportional. So I have a question for you is, how are you going to divide the cost down the road for the second and third people for projects before you know what you're going to approve? If you approve a fee on a landowner that say he's going to have 50 homes and you only approve 20, how is that going to work as a reimbursement rate? And then I'm sure your county council has already told you this is legal, so I won't question the legality of having us pay more for our impact than we actually are causing by having to build a whole road. But I'm curious why there's no thought of having an incentive, since we are paying more than our fair share, and there is always the possibility that we're not going to be reimbursed in our lifetime. So I'm curious about that. I read in the staff report of about a 25% surcharge. If you send staff down the road on this, I would really have to question if you would put a 25% surcharge because for making us participate in a program and then designing the program on your end, so it's really difficult to administer. That shouldn't be our responsibility. We shouldn't have to pay a surcharge for administrative costs. And the last item I'd like to add is, I didn't really see this until Glenn was making his presentation, is excluding roads and large lots, rural subdivisions from the county maintenance agreement. I'm always curious why anybody in a new subdivision should be treated like a second-class citizen when they're paying more in taxes than existing residents do. I don't know why that's a fair thing for anyone to think about, and I would encourage you not to do that. So I just don't think that's fair.
Jerry, what's your invitation for summertime or wintertime?
I actually think it's more exciting in the winter because if you try to get to my house from the street, you need bucket shoes, but like you're stepping through buckets of water. But my dogs would be very nice to catch them.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Greening.
Hi, I'm Eric Greening, and I hope we get back to having the kind of winters where you need buckets. Anyway, happy Bike Month, and I was glad to see that part highlighted. It used to be that there was a percentage of our road efforts that were to go to bike lanes, but recently it appears that the staff has found ways to actually incorporate bike lanes into when they fix crumbled edges and widen them and put the stripe there. I don't know if there's a way to come up with a percentage of what amount of pavement efforts are bike-related now. We used to kind of keep track of that separately. Backing up Jerry Bunin on imposing the cost of roads on the cost of building, we have had a steady trend away from imposing the cost of roads on drivers to imposing the cost of roads on everyone, and particularly people who just want to live someplace. And that's the opposite direction we should go if our smart growth policy should be moving us away from an auto-dominated way of building and way of living. Then we should not be externalizing the costs of auto use onto everyone. But it's exactly what's happening. The vehicle license fee was chopped by two-thirds. There's a desperate attempt to make some of that up now by charging kids for the next 30 years to pay back bonds with interest in the form of Proposition 1B. We could have collected as much money as Prop V will supposedly provide, 1B will supposedly provide, by maintaining the vehicle license fee where it was for five more years. If we had just left it where it was, that money would keep coming and there wouldn't be one penny of dent out of it. So it's moved from drivers to everyone, and especially kids. Same thing happens as gas tax becomes a shrinking proportion of the total price of gasoline. We get sort of bludgeoned into becoming a quote-unquote self-help county. Well, that's not gas tax. That's sales tax. Everyone pays it. Development fees for roads, those are paid the same whether the house that's built has no drivers, one car, two car, five cars. They pay the same fees. I would hope that we would, in looking long-term policy directions, look at ways both locally and in terms of our legislative platform to get the responsibility for roads back reconnected with vehicles and vehicle use and not just existing. And anything we can do that will help promote smart growth because it will acquaint auto users with true costs of auto use rather than externalizing it onto everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last request to speak. Bring back to the board. I see Mr. Stevenson's going to come and answer all our questions right now.
Thank you, Chairman Lenthal, members of the board. I didn't submit a request to speak, but I did want to comment just briefly on just a portion of this report. Your board is being asked to confirm current policies for the future, and I believe those are contained in Exhibit A or Attachment A, Public Works Policies. And as Glenn, I call your attention to page E16, Priority Betterments. This is Glenn described a process that where planning and public works together on enhancements for things such as downtown and business districts and so forth. And I would just like to ask that, more as a housekeeping item, that the items that were reflected in Glenn's PowerPoint that listed those betterment improvements would also be reflected in the policy that's listed on E16. It does not include those in there, and that would be my only suggestion to make that consistent with what we're doing now. Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn, is that just a stroke of a pen? I see your head nodding.
I can make that happen for put it in the policy.
Supervisor Asajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pretty, I'm trying to picture this, a new subdivision in the rural area, and I can see where you're saying that the houses have quite a distance between them or among themselves. But having said that, they also don't attract as many cars as they were nearby collectors or within a given community that has more than the number of the houses. And it is true that they do pay more
to development fees and higher property taxes and all that. So where is the fairness and or the formula that will help me decide that, yes, we need not to accept their roads into our maintenance program?
First of all, the cost of maintaining the road, while it is somewhat dependent on the traffic on the road, it's much more dependent on just the amount of road that's out there. Asphalt, while it does deteriorate because of traffic loading, it also just deteriorates because of sunlight and weather and things like that. So it is an extra cost for us to maintain. And the thought was that we look at not necessarily, we don't look at who the people are that are living in them. We're just looking at that there are people using this road, and we want the most bang for the buck. There are fewer people that are being benefited by that amount of money out there than there would be in where more people are using it. That's those two things went into our process. As I said earlier, we don't have this all fleshed out. We're looking for direction to see what your board preference is, and we can work up a program that would fit what the board wants.
I understand we're not going to make a decision here, but I was trying to see if when you come back, whatever directions we give you folks to, if that still is a recommendation, as how is it going to be packaged in order to market it for us to buy into it. Obviously, the weather does have its impact on the road, but the number of traffic or cars that go up and down, that does have its impact as well. And if there are lesser cars in those areas than others.
We also looked at what other counties are doing, and many other counties aren't accepting any new roads at all and haven't for years. They require all subdivisions and all new roads to be be in some kind of maintenance district. We have a study of that, and I'll give you more information on that if you like, but that was kind of what we were looking at when we were developing this. We thought it was, one extreme is to not accept any, and we're now at the other extreme where we accept all, and so we were looking at something in the middle, and this came to us as a we looked at the maintenance cost per mile, and we came up with a breaking point that made some sense as far as the size of lots that over which the cost became higher, and that's where we came up with
those counties who are not accepting any new roads. Do they have development fees, traffic fees?
Yes, do Richard, you want to handle that?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I helped Glenn with the research on this specific point. And in general, yes, the other counties that are implementing this policy do have impact fees, but impact fees such as we have cannot be spent for maintenance purposes, only for capital expenditures. So that's kind of an apples and oranges question.
Well, can we make apples then, and maybe when you come back to tell us what would be like if we were able to spend, unless legally we cannot do that, to take that money also into our maintenance program?
The money we currently charge in our impact fee program cannot be spent for maintenance.
And that's
we already know that.
And that's not just our ordinance, though, that's legality.
That's based on the state law that enabled it.
And what our attempt here is to kind of do that in a different way. Instead of having it the development fee, have the separate program where we then have an ongoing district that collects funding over time. And similar to the way we maintain drainage basins in subdivisions now, be a similar process. And that, the maintenance of that drainage basins continues with the property that's there, and it's set up at the time it's developed. And be a very similar program we'd be talking about.
I can see where you're going, and I think I need a little more time to absorb all that. Basins are, because of the new houses taking away the percolation soil, causing to the need for a basin rather than the few houses, and again, it's subdivision. and its impact on the entire road we have in place.
Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, I wanted to speak in favor of the road extension agreement. We just got through the one in Templeton, and we actually were able to build the road, put the signalization in, and actually it was more of a safety issue, too, because you saw the improvements to Los Tablas. We had no ability to stack traffic if we did not put in this other road. But I think it's a mechanism by which you can put in the roads in current dollars. And then, as you see in here, there's mechanisms for repayment, whether it be the road impact fees or whether it be assessment districts or however. But in this particular case, and I've worked with them before in other entities, that these extension agreements help you get these things done on a timely basis instead of after the fact.
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would actually, if I could, yield to Mr. Edge for a comment that I think he was going to make, if I might follow that up.
Dr. Edge?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was worried about an hour ago that you were going to lose your record and not get a free lunch today, but I...
Dr. Edge, we do the funny stuff. You're here to advise us.
I'm worried more about Cacho. His Rotary Club doesn't know who he is.
That's right. Budget, you received a copy. We'll be introducing it next week. And the simple reality is that any new house built in this county or any other county in the state for that matter does not generate enough money to cover the cost of county services delivered to that house. Doesn't matter whether it's a big house or a little house, single family dwelling, multiple dwellings. That's the nature of the taxing system. I'm not telling you that's a good or bad thing. It doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. It's what the people directed. Simple reality is, as you know, by definition, we are an average cost of service county. We have prevailing wage rates that say we pay averages and all of that related material. So generally, we're an average cost kind of county. We're neither particularly expensive nor particularly cheap relative to our colleagues. And we don't cover it. Roads budget over the past 10 years, if you look in some of the material in this item, you see in constant dollars, we give you a 10-year track record. In constant dollars, you've more than doubled the amount of the pizza. The dollar pizza that you're putting into roads. Roads is about the biggest increase departmental budget that you've had in 10 years, with the exception of fire. Fire's gone up 158% in real constant dollars, and roads is a little over about 110%. Even with that increasing amount of the pizza, the pie that you're giving to them, as you heard from Glenn, we are having trouble keeping up with the cost of maintaining roads. That's the reality that you have to deal with, and I think what you're hearing from Glenn are the staff looking at ways to try and keep a handle on maintaining roads and maintaining them at the rating system that keeps them relatively safe and relatively low cost to maintain before you take the precipitous decline. And as he said, what costs you a dollar to maintain right now costs you four or five times that if you fail to maintain that average rating. There are no easy answers to this. No easy answers for you guys as the policy directors. There's no easy answers that staff, you know, if there were easy answers, we would have generated them for you decades ago. It's not easy. We're simply looking for options. And the reality remains, how do you balance that budget with the demands that you faced?
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The follow-up to that comment is that studies going back, I think, at least 15, if not almost 20 years, have shown that the costs that Mr. Edge refers to are worse for rural large lot subdivisions. You get progressively less payback. You need to extend more services the further you go into the rural areas. So I think that it's clear that I would like to see direction to staff to consider not accepting rural large lot subdivisions roads into the county maintained program. I think that's a clear loser for the county. A couple other quick points. It seems to me that if we are to pursue road extension agreements, which sound reasonable, I would like to see them crafted with explicit consideration of our smart growth principles, because it was actually referenced in the SMART in the staff report that it's possible that extending a road could lead to the kind of sprawl that we're seeking to prevent. And so to the extent that providing reimbursement for infrastructure such as roads is a good idea, I think it is. I think we have to craft our extension policies. Where do we allow reimbursement of the first subdivider or the first development project? I'd like to see staff's fleshed out policies reflect that explicitly. And if that has to do with urban reserve lines and our explicit smart growth principles, that might be the place. I am concerned a bit about the thought of new cooperative road projects being separately required to form their maintenance districts. And I can see in some cases that might be appropriate. In some cases it might be unfair. And the thoughts, one of the places is in urbanized, unincorporated areas, for instance, Cambria. For instance, I think Napomo eventually, where we have a lot of unpaved roads, and in Los Osos eventually, when development when build out picks up there, we have cooperative road projects in place right now. We have had folks do assessments to create cooperative road projects, paved roads that are being maintained by the county. And I think the next person that comes in under a potential revised policy, if they're forced to create a maintenance district, then you have to ask the question, you know, I have simply extended, for instance, a paved piece of road, and I'm maintaining my part, but the guy three doors down is not having to put out to maintain theirs. So, again, in areas where cooperative road projects have been common, I think the fleshed-out policies should make some differentiation as to how we fund the maintenance issues. And the last point I had really speaks to that. I think Mr. Greening did bring up an excellent point that road maintenance does also fall to the issue of drivers. And I wonder if in considering how to finance the county's road maintenance budget, we might also have staff come back with ideas as to how we might start to shift some of that responsibility away from development and toward drivers.
If I may, with respect to your last point, that's the drivers, the road, the vehicles. That's historically from the beginning of highway systems. That's how it was intended. That was how it was done. That's why we have gasoline taxes. That was the mechanism that was produced. Unfortunately, for the road maintenance industry, the gasoline taxes haven't gone up at the same rate as the cost of maintaining roads, and that's been a political decision on the basis of those people that impose those taxes. Mm-hmm. That's why we're having to look for other ways to do things. One of the things that's looming out there for the road maintenance industry is the fact that cars aren't using as much gas. Mm-hmm. The more we conserve, then we go to alternate energy sources. Those alternate energy sources aren't being taxed at all for the road system. So that's a nationwide discussion that's going on as to how to implement that. And I haven't seen any great, you know, solution yet, but right. We're working on it.
Any silver bullets? But yeah. Do local jurisdictions have some ability to get at the gasoline tax?
Not that I know of. Does County Council know anything about that?
I don't think.
No, there's not a mechanism.
I mean, no, I don't.
Even the AB 1600 limited what you could use for and stuff.
You can use local agencies can impose sales taxes, and that's why they have done it a lot of places. That's why there are self-help counties. But gasoline taxes is a different animal, and I just heard yesterday that the federal government, you know, all of our bridge programs and those kinds of things, and all our federal money comes from federal gas taxes. And because of the cost of gasoline right now, the Congress is considering taking off the federal gas tax for the summer, which would be great for the drivers, but wouldn't help us maintain our road system at all. with respect to the Cooperative Road Program, the only thought there was that this is a discretionary volunteer program on behalf of the people. They would be voting on it, and if this would impose something different on them, they would have the ability to vote whether they want it or not. It's always difficult when you've had a program in place for 20 years, and much of Cambria was paved with that. A lot of Los Osos was paved with that before the moratorium. So this is going to be different than it was.
Right.
But that's just the people will know that going in, and they'll be able to make their own decision whether the paving the road is good enough for them, big enough benefit for them to go forward.
Do you have a ballpark estimate on what that adds? I mean, it's an ongoing expense then, but any rough ideas over the cost of installing the road?
Well, the only one off the top of my head is $11,500 a mile.
Okay. And what is it?
That's roughly what it costs us to maintain the road system there.
Okay. And what does it cost to put in a mile of co-op road project?
I don't know.
I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Much of what I wanted to say has been said. I concur with Supervisor Ovitt regarding the road extension agreement. I think it's a good idea. We need to be able to let the developers recoup some of the costs. It was raised in the staff report as well as in a conversation I had with planning about the threat of the sprawl issue, and I concur with Supervisor Gibson that I would like to see a mechanism to try to minimize the effect of a road extension agreement on promoting sprawl development. And one thing that we might use is make that program available to development that occurs within the urban or village reserve lines to encourage the development in the more urbanized areas rather than out in the rural areas. Also, I just want to raise the flag regarding the self-help county issue that has been raised. Current legislation at the state would only allow much of the Prop B, 1B money to be awarded to counties that have adopted a sales tax, and San Luis Obispo County has not, so we may not be able to acquire some of those bond monies unless we're able to change state legislation. So I support in directing public works staff to pursue these issues that were raised today and come back with us, but include, as was suggested, ideas on how we might move beyond just local initiatives to get more revenue for our road maintenance programs. And I like the idea of user pay, and Mr. Greening talked about the vehicle license fee, and obviously we can't adopt that independently of state action, but we could at least include that in our legislative platform, encourage our state legislators to put that back on vehicles and actually charge the cost of maintaining the roads to the people that use them rather than continuing to lump them on development. And the other issue I think that I want to point out, and then we'll move this forward, is that the fact that we haven't addressed this issue more frequently and more seriously is precisely what's gotten us in the position we're in today, where we have severe traffic impacts in a number of areas throughout the county because the cost of developing the roads infrastructure goes up much quicker than our ability to acquire the revenue to make the fix. And just putting that cost on development just gets us further and further behind. We need to look at more creative ways to do it. And I don't have the answer, but I'm hoping that public works staff and working with planning staff will come up with some ideas on how we might catch up. And again, that's precisely why staff, both public works and planning, are working on some ideas for infrastructure financing, and we need to move forward with that and see if we can't get beyond this dilemma we find ourselves in. We're just perpetually getting farther and farther behind. Thank you.
Supervisor Olbert.
Yeah, I was going to make a motion, but before I did, I just want to advise or give you the warning that if you let the state legislature do anything with the sales tax, then more than likely take it away and use it for something else. And the history of vehicle license fee was that very little of it ended up coming back in terms of maintenance. It was used for health and welfare, which it is currently being used for. It was never, that I know of, ever used for vehicle maintenance or maintenance of systems. So be careful when you start adding these things off, because the history is that the state is good at taking it away. Same thing with property tax. We I don't know how much right now we send away in ERAF monies.
More than we get back.
And yeah, well, we don't get it back at all. You know, at one point it was like, I think for us it was almost, what, $2.5 million a year or more that we're losing. And it going for other things and what it was intended for, local things. So with that, I would make a motion to accept counties, accept the staff's report and come back with us on the additional policies that they brought forward.
Okay. Motion by Supervisor Obed, second by Supervisor Gibson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carries unanimously. Mr. Lindholm. Talk about closed session, please.
Yes. At this point in time, the board's about to go into closed session on the items that are listed on the agenda.
And your estimated time, sir?
20 minutes.
Thank you. I'll open a public comment. I did receive one request to speak. Gary Payne, would you like to come forward? And, Mr. Payne, I read your request here. You're certainly welcome to your full 3 minutes. You are not allowed or not invited to attend a closed session meeting or a hearing. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with county staff or someone from social services or anybody else from the admin office on down, you're sure welcome to do that.
Okay.
But this is your chance to basically let us know what you have to say. And anything that you don't want to say in public, you want to make an appointment with somebody else, that's certainly an option for you. But those are your only options.
Okay. And who would that be that I could make an appointment with?
Well, in reading your request here, I'm not sure if you want to start with county council or somebody from general services. So I'll leave that up to you.
Because I've been going through the complaint process, and as soon as I get so far, I was supposed to be put in front of the panel review board, and then they did not.
If it's a personnel, probably go to HR.
Yeah.
If it's so.
And I went all the way through the process. And
have you gone through the human services office, resources office, human resources office?
The human resources office? Yeah, I kind of get tossed around all over the place with that. And more than anything, I just want to see that nothing like this could ever happen again.
Why don't you use your 3 minutes here and tell us what it is?
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Payne, what you need to do is you just tell us what you want to say right now in public comment, and I'll be glad to meet with you later and see if I can offer to give you some assistance or guidance on who to see. But
okay.
The appropriate thing is for you to take advantage of your public comment now with items pertaining to closed session.
Well, there was a...
And you'll need to state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gary Payne. There was... an employee within Department of Social Services, and she did not follow her rules, procedures, and it has made quite a mess. And if we could talk about that later or anything, if we could set
Mr. Chair, I think unless the item is scheduled in front of us to be discussed in closed session, my recommendation will be that take the offer from the chairperson and meet with him and see where you go from there.
Okay.
I think that will serve your needs best and the public's needs best as how we conduct business here.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, since it's not listed on closed session, I really can't allow you to comment on that.
Okay.
Okay. Any other item that you want to bring up would be appropriate for 9 o'clock in the morning during regular public comment.
Okay.
For those items not on the agenda.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. With that, we'll be adjourned. We'll be back at 2 o'clock.
Oh, good. Lunch with Lindholm again.